Welcome everyone to Classic Comics. My name is Matthew Lloyd, and as we explore the world of comics before the Golden Age, today we're going to take a look at Jay Garrick, the Golden Age Flash. And to help us do that, we have a guest hailing from the Great White North and DC Comics News, Mr. Derek McNeil. Derek, it's been a long time coming. I first mentioned this episode to you years ago, and you're finally here. I'm so happy to have you. Hope you're having a great day and it's not too cold for you up there in the Great White North.
Actually pretty warm, especially for February. It's a few degrees above freezing today.
Oh. Well, my daughter recently moved to Alaska, so she's been telling us all about the really cold weather, so you're positively balmy compared to her.
Oh, yeah. Where I am is about level with New York State, so we've got more or less the same weather as they're having there.
Well, I'm glad it's not too cold then. Well, as I said, you and I are going to talk about the Golden Age Flash, but first, I'm going to steal a page out of Tony Farina's book from Indie Comics Spotlight. And Derek, tell us your comic book origin. How did you get into comics?
Well, it's sort of vague because I was really, really little when I first started getting into comics. But it has to do with the Adam West Batman reruns, the Super Friends, and the actual comics. And I cannot tell you which came first, but I know they all came about the same time in the early 70s, and I massively got into the DC comics through those influences.
That is very similar to me. We are almost exactly the same age. I think we had a similar experiences with the same kinds of TV shows, the Batman TV show, the 1967 Spider-Man TV animated series. Did you ever watch that?
Oh, yes, I remember that.
I don't know what came first either, whether it was comics and I watched the show or I saw the Batman show on TV and then I got comics, but it was all early 70s, probably somewhere around 1974, I think I probably got my first superhero comics. I know it was Issue Detective, Wonder Woman 211, and I think it's Spider-Man 138. They're all from 1974. It's all that same period. Actually, the Detective and the Wonder Woman are those 100-page giants, and they came out on the same day.
Well, my first DC comic was Detective, I think, 446. It had the Creeper guest starring.
Oh, okay.
And it had, like, on the cover, "Enter the Creeper and exit the Batman."
I am very close to that. The Detective is a few issues. It's like 440, 441, somewhere in that area. It's it had a Golden Age Green Lantern reprint in it, a Simon and Kirby Manhunter reprint, a Dollman reprint, a Hawkman reprint from the 60s, and the last story was one of the Goodwin Simonson Manhunter stories. The first half of the comic is missing, so I don't actually know what Batman story it is because it's gone, and it's been gone for as long as I can remember.
Well, I hunted down a copy of that Detective later on. I don't have the originals long gone, but when I saw a copy of it, oh yeah, I'm grabbing that.
I've thought about it, but unfortunately those 100-page giants are more expensive than I wanted to pay for a second copy down the line. But what about the Golden Age Flash? How did you first get introduced to him, and how did you first, I mean, I know you're a big Flash fan in general, but how did you first get into the Golden Age Flash and Jay Garrick and that sort of thing?
Well, that would be Adventure Comics 460.
Okay.
That was a Barry Allen story. But Jay, he was having an adventure on Earth 2 with Jay, And at the end, he's returning to Earth One, or trying to, and ends up in a trap that has been preset for Jay.
Oh.
And so he's going through this version of Jay's life, or sort of like Jay's life if it had been all messed up. But
Oh.
everybody think in this illusion thinks he's Jay and keeps calling him Jay. And like one of the villains, I think the fiddler is married to Joan, and they have a kid. And
I feel like I've read that story. Is that one of the issues with the Justice Society in it?
I think it was just before the Justice Society was brought into the adventure.
Okay, because that sounds really familiar. Like I've read that. Maybe I've read it somewhere else recently or fairly recently. But that so the thing with Jay and Joan, or Joan and the fiddler being married, that sounds familiar. Now I'm gonna have to hunt that down after we have our conversation. So I know we both have talked about having that famous first editions of Flash comics, with Jay's first appearance and origin. Do you remember getting that, or how you got it, or what you thought of that, or what your perception of the Flash was at Jay at the time when you got it, or was that so early on, it was one of your first introductions to the character.
Well, that particular edition, like the oversized first edition tabloid, that was I had actually got a whole trove of tabloids that had just come into my local comic shop
Oh.
as a bunch, and oh, I'm grabbing those. So I was well familiar with Jay when I got a hold of that. But
Okay.
I managed to fill a lot of holes in my tabloid collection with that whack of books.
And do you have a lot of the tabloids in general of the besides the famous first editions, but the other ones that were?
I have all the DC tabloids except some of the Rudolphs.
Oh, okay. But you have some of the
Yes,
Rudolphs.
some very beaten up copies. They're the hard ones to find because they had like the very, very tiny print runs.
Oh, okay. Okay, even though they're a Christmas special, I guess they didn't sell quite as well as
Well, the
the
first
regular
one was
ones.
just sort of, we're going to try this. So we put out a very small print run. And then the rest think, well, maybe Rudolph's not going to sell that great, so we'll print less of him.
I guess that makes sense in hindsight. Now I first encountered Jay Garrick when I got All-Star Comics number 65, and I got that when it first came out. That was also my first introduction to the JSA, Earth 2, Power Girl, the concept of the Golden Age Superman, all those Earth 2 concepts. That was the fir my first introduction. But it's a neat issue because you have like almost all of the team at the time. Superman isn't the issue. Go ahead.
Was that the 70s reboot of All Star?
The
I
original.
think you may have just made a liar out of me because I actually had that book, so maybe Adventure wasn't my first Jay Garrick comic.
Well, that the Golden Age All-Star ended in 50 issue 57. It relaunched with 58 in 1970. I think it's late 75 or early 76, one of those. And then 65 I got was the one I got, and it's got the Golden Age Superman in it, Power Girl, Star Spangled Kid, Flash is in it, makes an appearance, Green Lantern, Hawkman. It has a little bit of everything in that issue as part of the team is fighting Vandal Savage in I don't know if it's another space or outer space or a different dimension or something. And then the other subplots are running concurrently and they jump throughout the issue in that to try to cover as much as they can with the team doing different things. And so it was a great issue to have to at least for me, to get a look at these characters for the first time, not really having connected the dots that I'd seen that Golden Age Green Lantern in that Detective Comics reprint from a few years earlier. But it was the first time I kind of understood this was something different, and this is a different Superman. That's not Captain America, that in a weird costume. That's the Star Spangled Kid. That's somebody totally different. And I started realizing, oh, they're different versions of the regular characters that I knew. So that's what started me on the whole Golden Age and Earth 2 trail. And eventually
Yeah, I
became
had
my
the
thing.
first. I had the first issue of the reboot of All Star at that time. I don't know if Jay was in the very first issue. Maybe he wasn't, and maybe Adventure Comics was my first Jay.
I'm trying to think. That first issue
It was
is.
concentrated on Power Girl, Robin,
Yeah.
and was it
Star.
Star Spangled Kid as the third?
Yeah, because they have like the younger generation of those characters.
They were
Yeah.
calling them the Super Squad.
Yeah, the All-Star Super Squad. Exactly. And so they're kind of in a little bit of conflict with the older JSA members, which is something that Roy Thomas would later, a theme he would later recapitulate with Infinity Inc. in the 80s, but it's the same kind of thing. Star Spangled Kid has just come back out of limbo from the 40s with the Seven Soldiers of Victory. Power Girl is introduced in that issue, and Robin is, I mean, you figure he's younger, but he's also like in the timeline, he's like in his 40s.
Yeah,
So he's not that young.
I also really like that. It's the characters we know, but different,
Yeah.
and with some new characters and some that they're very familiar and some that are a bit off and.
Yeah, that's still my favorite thing is the original Earth 2.
And that was a whole new thing at the time. Like nowadays, there's all sorts of Elseworlds and parallel Earths and alternate versions all over the place. But at the time, a different version of the character, that was like something totally brand new and.
It was, and I think that the way they did it then was what appealed to me was they tried to create it as its own Earth with its own stories, and it was it seemed to have just as much importance in the DC universe as the main universe. It was just another universe with, like you said, some are the same or very familiar, some are very different, and some are unique, like Power Girl or later on the Huntress, very unique as compared to Earth One, as opposed to just there being this plethora of, iterations of Batman here, there, and everywhere. I think it's lost its the whole idea of the multiverse has lost its impact because there are so many, and they don't focus on set specific versions of characters having lives and stories moving forward. It's just, oh, what if Batman had one arm, or what if Batman, was a Green Lantern or whatever, the different things they have these days to use the multiverse concept. I don't think it's being used to its potential. I think it's there's so much of it that it actually dilutes things as opposed to strengthening the foundation of what we
Do
get
you
in the
think
DC
that was
universe.
what the original, well, the various crises were intended for, was to sort of cut it back so we could have a core that was could be concentrated on rather than infinite or thousands or millions or
You mean like the original Crisis on Infinite Earths?
yeah, where it
Yeah.
cut it, well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like the early, crossovers were all always Crisis on Earth One, Crisis on Earth Two, Crisis on Earth A, but from the Justice League crossovers, from the Justice League comics in the 60s. But yeah, definitely once they did Crisis on Infinite Earths, the idea was we're going to focus on the one universe, but everybody wanted, but the ideas were so, I think, entrenched at that time that people still wanted to explore those things. They
Well,
didn't want to
I
be done
noticed
with it.
that. Yeah, I noticed it didn't take long till they got to the point where, well, we got rid of the multiverse, but let's bring in this thing called hypertime, which is essentially
Yeah.
storytelling-wise the exact same thing.
Exactly. It's just another way to do the same thing. I don't know why. And even like before we even got to that, we had to get that story in Legion to explain the Pocket Universe Superboy. That was weird.
Okay, so I think that this might explain why when it came around to further crises that they just and they redefined the multiverse again, instead of this time cutting it down to a single multiverse, they decided, well, let's just give it a finite number like 52. But not an infinite number. But still, we ended up with more, well, more going beyond the 52 anyway. So,
I mean, I'm thinking like back to the end of the weekly 52 series that introduced that 52 universes, and then they just kind of didn't do much with it. They reintroduced it, and then it just kind of sat there until, if I remember correctly, they didn't do much with it, you know?
well, I think they sort of got wrapped up in the meaning of that number 52 too much to sort of figure out or to worry too much about the details around it and what it was doing to the overall continuity.
Yeah, I mean, I like that they were reintroduced in the back and the end of that and those glimpses of the universes. There was a new Earth 2 with, you saw Huntress, I think, definitely, and Power Girl and the and Golden Age looking versions of characters that had been tweaked, but it just got forgotten. It didn't come back. It didn't come back, It was just forgotten. And a few years later, there's the whole new 52 reboot with that 52 again number. And we got an Earth 2 in that, but it was not anything like,
Well,
continuing the
I think,
story. It was brand new.
yeah, I think that version of the Earth 2 was sort of doomed from the start because the newer readers didn't really care that much about the Earth 2 history, whereas the older readers like us that liked the Earth 2 history liked the classic Earth 2. They didn't want a younger, new generation redefined new fifth Earth 2.
I think that points to, I think, what a lot of readers like about comics that I feel like the companies don't get is that readers are more interested in the people inside the costumes than the costumes. I mean, people don't like the Flash over, they might initially be attracted to a character because of a look or a power set, but they stick around in the long run because you're interested in the person inside the costume and what's going on with that person and perhaps morals, values, types of stories that about that person. And that to me fits in with what you're saying because like the part that worked the best of the for the F Earth 2 and during the New 52 was Power Girl and Huntress because they actually had a lot of the substance of the original versions, even if they were supposed to be new versions with a slightly different history, they had enough of a similar history, and their characterization was pretty much right that it felt close enough that you could still read it and enjoy it and feel like you were pretty close. Whereas, like the new Jay Garrick in that series was He was young. He may have had some of the attributes that we see in Jay at the very beginning of his introduction in Flash Comics, but it certainly he has none of the history as a new superhero in that series, just getting his powers, or what do they call him on that Earth? Wonders. They called them wonders on that Earth. He's not got any of the history and experience that we've come to like about Jay Garrick over the past 84 years now. And that's kind of what I think that they missed the boat on is it's not just the costume and the powers, it's that history that developed the lives these characters have over time and their relationships. That's what you're coming back for. You're not coming back because you just like the guy because he's got the tin hat and he runs fast or whatever character you're talking about, you know?
Yeah, well, that Jay, I was sort of missing the older Jay that was the mentor to the younger heroes, because he always was sort of the father, uncle figure to the younger generation of heroes as they came in.
And that's such an important aspect of his character as he was developed. I mean, I guess to me that's something that comes up in the 90s, I guess, under like I guess it's like Mester Loebs and Mark Waid and those and that run on the Flash on when Wally West was the main character in the book, where he really is developed like that after the Crisis and Wally takes the title takes the mantle of the Flash from Barry. I mean, he'd always been a and somebody for Barry to look up to, but it wasn't quite as fatherly and mentor like as it was with Wally, and then later on Matt, not Max, Bart. It's that's a whole different dynamic that plays out better with those characters than it does Barry. But that's something we need to talk about here as we when we get into the current miniseries that's going on. Let's backtrack just a bit and mention a few things about the Flash, Jay Garrick, before we start getting in deep with the new stuff. So, people that maybe don't have the comic book experience that we do with the character are following along. Flash first appeared in Flash Comics number one. We talked about that. Created by Gardner Fox and Harry Lampert. Lampert didn't stay in the book long and was taken over by E.E. Hibbard as the artist. And then he also had a now this is something they never reprint is anything from All Flash. I think there's a couple stories in some old issues of Flash Comics from the 70s, but Jay had his own series called All Flash Comics. It was quarterly. It might have turned bi-monthly. I don't think it ever did. I didn't check that, but I'd love to see some more of those, some of those stories reprinted. They don't reprint it. It was hardly ever. Maybe an All Flash number one facsimile. That'd be a great facsimile, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you're definitely more well read than I am on the Golden Age end of the stories. Mostly, I've only seen a few things that have been reprinted here and there, as I haven't really had the chance to buy very many stuff that would be called Golden Age, and because generally the prices of those go crazy now.
Yeah, I haven't bought a Golden Age book in many, 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 many years, and I only have one Flash Comics. It's one of the who is it? Is that when Chet Kozlak was drawing Jay? So he had his own appearances in Flash Comics all the way up to 104 when it got canceled. He was in All-Star Squadron, All-Star Squadron, All-Star Comics for all the way up to 57 when it got canceled. And then they had the Comet Cavalcade book, which was like a World's Finest for the All-American books in the DC line, which is a something I've really got to delve into at some point more heavily with the split between DC and All-American. But Gia, Green Lantern, Flash, and Wonder Woman were kind of like the Trinity for the All-American titles. If anybody's confused about that, I promise I'll do something on the All-American line of comics that fell under the larger DC
I read a very
umbrella.
interesting thread on Twitter about where one person was going through the history of DC and or National and All American, and was saying that basically All American was the first acquisition of DC's.
Yeah, and but it still kind of operated separately editorially, even though they shared
Like
characters in the same books.
after that is like what DC eventually acquired All American. I always had thought it was sort of more a merger, but it was more of an acquisition.
Okay. I need to do something. Something with a story with that, because like even like in the middle 40s, like I have an All-American comics with Green Lantern and all the title, not just a book, but it actually has an All-American mark on it instead of the that a Superman DC publication. It's an All-American comics little
They were
circle.
basically two companies working under one banner.
Yeah.
And then they sort of had a split. And All American, occasionally they do like reprints where they black out or overwrite the National characters.
Oh, really? Huh.
And then it was owned by Max Gaines,
Yeah.
and he sold that so he could start Educational Comics, which eventually became EC, which became MAD,
And
which is back at DC now.
the DC. That's kind of funny that when you think about that. Yeah, so I it's fun to think about like the Flash as being a more prominent and important character in terms of being one of the main three from the All-American line, if you can kind of separate them as a separate company in your head, sort of, even though they were crossing over with other characters in All-Star Comics. Although now that you mention it like that, I wonder if we went to that time when they sort of were split, if there were probably no national characters in All-Star Comics at the time, it probably would have been Flash, Green Lantern, Wonder Woman, Dr. Midnight, Johnny Quick, not Johnny Quick, Dr. Johnny, Johnny Thunder, and then Black Canary comes along. And those are all under the All-American Hawkman. Those are all under All-American books. There's none. Our man's not there. He left pretty early. There's no Starman by that point. Obviously, Superman and Batman had never appeared regularly in that. That's interesting. That's an interesting little rabbit hole for me to go down and investigate and set up some dates with issue numbers and stuff, the kind of nerdy thing I'd like to do. So we don't see Jay Garrick after All-Star Comics number 57 until the Flash of Two Worlds story from the Flash 123 in 1961. And that's the story that reintroduces the idea of Golden Age characters into the DC universe at the time. But as we're talking today, I think something you and I would probably get a kick out of doing is thinking about how that story, what's that story look like now in the reconstructed timeline that we have now? Even if it's not really been reconstructed, what could it look like? Because after they merged the universes, like you were talking about in Crisis, there is a, was it in a Secret Origins annual or something that goes through the whole story of
I
how.
believe yes, I believe I know the issue you're talking to, where this Jay's villains had sort of made everybody forget that Keystone City had existed, and that
Yeah.
Barry had found the right frequency or something to rediscover it, and suddenly
Yeah.
everybody remembers.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's not too dissimilar from the idea of Judy being taken out of the timeline, and once she comes back, everybody remembers her and all this other stuff. But what I was going to mention was in the current Flash series, the Jay Garrick series that's being published, we see Jay and Judy operating in 1963. Barry wouldn't have been around in 1961 to cross over, to find Jay now in 1961. So what in the world does that Flash story, what does that look like?
Well, I think like because DC sort of operates on the sliding timeline, I got to think that Barry's prime was probably the 90s or the 2000s.
Yeah, but it says that Jay is operating in 1963.
Well, that's one thing I find is a problem that keeps coming up with the JSA because they keep wanting to keep them tied to World War II, but that keeps removing them further and further and further from the current day in the modern DCU. So
It
whereas
does.
it started out, okay, yeah, they're 20 years older than the Justice League. Now there's something like 80 years older than the Justice League.
Yeah, it's something like that now. I think that's why I liked it when it was stuck on Earth 2, as opposed to being part of the main continuity, because you could always just say that happened then, and that Earth keeps age you keep aging on that Earth, and you can continue to introduce more characters and et cetera, and you can always tell stories from a different time period, and it doesn't have to necessarily line up with the time period of the main Earth.
What I think they're going to eventually have to do is in the main DCU, decouple the Justice Society from World War II, and then they can maybe have an Earth 2 with the classic JSA that is World War II, and then sort of have the JSA maybe a couple decades back in whatever conflict was a couple of years back, whether it's Korean War, the Vietnam War, the Gulf War, whatever.
Yeah, I worry about that because I think you lose so much if you take away
Well,
the
that's why you still
history.
have the classic one for the history on a separate universe, like bring back the classic Earth 2 for
Sure,
that.
I've been saying that since 1985.
And then in the main DCU, they can have the older Justice Society, but they're not necessarily all veterans of World War II
Right,
anymore.
right. And I personally, even on the main Earth, would be fine with only having, a couple of them left because they're the only ones who could have survived that long. And if we had legitimate, replacement legacy characters, I'm fine with that. That's a concept that's always worked, in my opinion, for the JSA. That's how we got characters like Power Girl and the
Well, they're
Huntress to
not,
begin with.
there's not very many of the originals left
No,
now,
they're
is there?
not. No, it's really just Jay, Alan. I guess Ted Grant Wildcat still shows up, but
Wesley came back very briefly during the last event. What was it, Nightmares?
but that was like all in a dream, though, wasn't it? He wasn't really
Sort of
alive.
zombified. They brought him
Yeah.
back zombified for
Something like that. Yeah, he had an appearance there, but he wasn't, still alive.
but they put him back when they were
Yeah.
done with him. They
Yeah.
didn't say, okay, yeah, we're gonna have him lurking around the DCU like this for now, from now on.
Zombie Sandman. That would be an interesting
And they don't seem to be too sure whether with Jim Corrigan, the Spectre, because sometimes when the Spectre shows up, it's Jim Corrigan, but sometimes it shows up, it's
Alan.
Crispus Allen, yeah, the newer Spectre. So they don't seem to be sure which one is their ongoing Spectre.
I think that's another issue with DC is and continuity is that they're not willing to give us a continuity to stick to, and it's just the idea that whatever you want to happen can happen. And you just use what you want to use, even if it's conflicts with other stories that are being told concurrently. And that's a real issue to me with editorial. And it's so different from, what it was like in the Bronze Age, and even, really up to the New 52. It was very, people knew what was going on. You had a history for these characters. You knew where they'd been, what they'd done, and maybe there were tweaks and stuff here and there, but there was a conscious effort to say, this is what happened now, not just, well, this happened and that happened, maybe both happened, I don't know. And that just, it just feels like it's kind of everywhere and nobody really cares. And to me, it hurts, like a book like Justice Society or those characters that have been around and have those histories and such like that, I'm sure you've seen me complain about Power Girl, and she's just basically been reinvented as a different character with supposedly the same history, but no substance of that history in her character. And it's not even like reading a Power Girl book. She's nothing at all what she's supposed to be like. But in the Justice Society book that Geoff Johns is writing, she acts the same as she's always acted and seems like she's who she's supposed to be.
Well, I've been hoping now that Mark Waid has returned to DC that they've sort will sort of use him as a arbiter of what is canon and what isn't, because he's one of these ones that's knowledgeable about the what all's going on in DC history and what's changed and what hasn't. And he usually keeps pretty good track of what's going on.
And with what he's done with the Shazam book, trying to reintroduce a lot of the classic elements, it certainly gives one hope if they allow him to do that sort of thing. But I almost get the feeling that nobody cares. And I don't know if it's because the writer, most so many of the writers just don't know, or they actually don't care. And if anybody cares, I don't feel like they're really being custodians of these characters anymore. They're just trying to tell stories without any sense of who they're supposed to be, you know?
Well, there's some of that, and I think there's some DC editorial maybe that he's running up against, because you can tell a lot with the Shazam series, especially, that it's more, some things are more of a compromise than because you can tell he's maybe wanted to bring more back than actually has come back.
Most obviously the name. I mean, he's
Yes.
calling him the Captain, even though we all want to call him Captain Marvel. Although you pointed out to me that, Mary Marvel is back as Mary Marvel. That's her name, not just, Mary.
Well, Marvel doesn't have a trademark on that, so the marketing, the branding is still full freely available for DC to use.
That's true. That's true. But they even got Freddie Freeman drawn more like he's supposed to be.
In some panels,
In
it
some,
depends.
he
He
even
tends
had
to go
that.
back and forth.
He had the ascot at one in one of them, even. So I
But
thought
I've
that was.
noticed his hair seems to go back and forth between blonde and brunette,
Yeah,
where
blonde and light brown somewhere in the instead of that dark hair that we're used to seeing. But I mean, I guess, I'll take as close as we can get to the real thing, if that's all we're gonna get. And maybe over time we will, who knows? But I sometimes, you feel like these writers get it, and sometimes you don't. I feel like Jeremy Adams, who's writing the current Jay Garrick series, gets the history and the things that make these characters fun and for people and want and makes those connections. I think he did it with his Flash series with Wally that he was taken off of far too early, in my opinion. But he was able to bring back so much of the feeling of the family and the continuity of the mantle and Wally's life and Barry's life. And he brought Jay back, he brought Max back, he brought all those things back that we like because it fleshes out the whole story. And not everybody gets that and doesn't seem willing to be able to make those connections, you know?
yes, Adams was very much the exact right writer at the exact right time with Wally, as he came in as like basically Wally after Heroes in Crisis was a broken character,
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Jeremy Adams came in and basically put Wally back to how he should be.
And DC let him do it, but it makes you wonder why they don't let, why other writers don't do that with other characters. What is it that why does Power Girl not get the same kind of treatment? Why does she get, basically destroyed in her series? Why do they change other things? And I don't know how much you want to talk about, or if you're interested in talking about the current Green Lantern miniseries with those changes. But that, the Flash, the Sandman series, all go together with the JSA series. To an extent, and of course the mini series with the Star Girl and the Lost Children, but they're all trying to tell this bigger story of, I guess, how the Golden Age is now. And that's kind of what we're going to get to with the current Flash series with the some of the changes they've made there. What are your thoughts on that? That's a lot. I said a lot. Start wherever you want to start.
Well, generally, I sort of like the idea of this that they're bringing in with this new golden age, but sort of I guess it's a case by case basis as to what how well each of these specific changes work within the story. But I guess the one specifically we're looking at is the reintroduction of Judy Garrick, and I sort of like the idea, but I'm sort of still waiting to see how well they work her into the continuity. Hopefully a lot smoother than a lot of DC's recent continuity changes have been done, if you get me.
What are you referring to specifically?
Hmm?
What are you referring to specifically? What specific continuity changes?
Well, well, I'm talking like our old friend Bendis.
Oh.
Like a lot of the stuff he brought into the entire
Oh yeah.
stuff, which is DC seems to be quietly trying to sweep as much as they can to the side until people forget about it.
Yes. Okay. Well, that specifically is something I can address. And no matter what Derek may tell you on social media, or if you ever meet him in person, Bendis is no friend of mine. It's good that they're sweeping some stuff away, but they need to sweep it all away. They need to reset that Superman back to that. For just before that first Bendis issue, and just go back. I
Well,
can't.
that's one thing I was sort of hoping that would come in with this Lost Children, is when they find this island of lost sidekicks and children of superheroes, is that 10-year-old John Kent might be there.
Oh man, that would have been great. That would have been great. Yeah, unfortunately, I guess he wasn't tied closely enough with the JSA to be able to pull that off. But, I think DC has John Kent there to be something else now. He's no longer, he's no longer there as Superman's son and as an opportunity to tell stories about that. He's there for representation now, and they'll never really be able to take that away. They'll never be able to de-age him and make him, just a kid again, so that we can
Well, it's
see
kind of
that
hard to say for
era.
sure because you never know if he ends up sort of being sidelined for a while and people sort of don't think of the character much.
Right.
Because I always said with Shazam, as DC was calling him in the New 52, I always said with the New 52, Geoff Johns, Shazam. That's the way he was going to stay until one the movies were a thing of the were gone, and two some writer with clout comes into DC and wants to turn him back. And what do you know, the second Shazam movie didn't do very well, and sort of that the whole Z Snyderverse
Collapsed.
basically collapsed. And two, Mark Waid returned and wanted to do Shazam. And what we got, we've got a Shazam that's getting very close to the classic, or well, a captain who's very close to the classic Captain Marvel
Yes,
now.
that's true. That's true. And I guess the fact that Wally was able to be rescued from Tom King's treatment of him is a testament that change like that is possible. But I guess I think there are some things they won't touch. I think it'd be very difficult to take John Kent back to being a kid at this point. That's my feeling on it. That doesn't mean I wouldn't buy a Super Sons book, even if it was, out of continuity or out of time. Here's a story from, years ago. I would still buy that, but
I think they've already done one or two
they have.
Super Sons that are out of continuity,
They
or
have
at
they
least set in a pre in the previous before the aging up.
before Bendis.
Yeah.
Well, what about Jay Garrick and Judy, and how she's fitting in? What do you have any concerns about it? I mean, I know I do. But it's not so much that I don't like the book. I actually like the character. I like the idea of the character. But for me, it's really hard to see Jay as having a kid all this time when that was one of those small those details about him that was something very specific. He and Joan couldn't have kids for whatever reason, and yet he was able to be a parent, mentor, father figure to, like you were saying earlier, these other younger heroes, either in the Flash family or in the JSA. It takes that same theme and gives it right back to him as being a biological father with a daughter.
Well, with retcons, I tend to not be. I tend to give them a bit of leeway if they actually end up making the characters happier. And
Okay.
I sort of like the idea that Jay and Joan, instead of having been childless, got a daughter. And it does sort of add an interesting wrinkle that suddenly 100 and something year old couple have a teenager daughter.
Yeah, that's really a that's what I mean. They're over 100 now. They got to be like 100
Yeah,
and
that's a huge generation gap.
yeah.
Because they're basically raised, Jay and Joan were raised in the 30s,
Yeah, 20s and 30s, yeah.
and well, I guess Judy has had part of her upbringing in the I guess 50s.
I think that, and that's something I want to see them do is like give some more specifics, you know, like I was it, did they say she was born in 47 or something? Am I remembering something? Well, they said she's 15 in one of the issues of the series. I think it's in 19, I think it's when she's in 1963. She's supposed to be 15. So like you said, Judy had part of her upbringing during that and they're in the 50s, so she's used to that sort of world. But I think it also has the potential now to have that character out of time, like Captain America, but seen through the eyes of a teenager, which should be a whole lot different than through the eyes of an adult like Steve Rogers.
Yeah, it's sort of like a strange mishmash like you wouldn't see in any real life situation because she's sort of her bulk of her upbringing so far has been 50s and 60s, but now she's in the 2020s, whereas Jay has seen all the time in between, but he's instead of just like being a decade removed from her viewpoint, he's nearly getting the bulk of a century away from her viewpoint. So there's got to be like clash of values and how to approach things.
You almost wonder if Jay might be able to navigate things even better than Judy because he's lived through it and seen the changes and had so many different experiences. Whereas Judy is suddenly coming out of, you know, I guess disappearing in 1963, and all of a sudden it's, gosh, she's been gone for 60 years, hasn't she? It's 60 years later, you know. If you think about what the world was like in 1963, that's, you know, that's a really huge change for someone who didn't get to experience any of that. You know, and you're just bouncing out, whereas Jay has seen all those things. He's lived through all those things and been able to, you know, I guess grow as a person along the way as well, instead of just being popped out into the modern world, you know,
Yeah.
like Judy.
It's sort of an interesting contrast to what happened with Superman and John, is because with Superman and John, it was instantaneous, but suddenly there was a gap of years gone. Whereas with Judy and Jay, there was like a huge gap of years. But as far as Judy, like, but and then they're having to, but she's exactly the same age she was, and they're sort of having to pick up where they left off 60 years later.
But in a totally different time with a totally different world around them. I mean, obviously I would hope the series would continue because there's so much potential and interesting stuff there. But I don't know if we'll, I don't know if we'll get that, obviously. But even though I'm liking it and enjoying it, there's still this bugaboo in the back of my mind. Like I was saying, it's such a change for Jay as far as the whole childless thing goes. It was such a, I don't want to say it was such a part of his character, but it informed his character enough that changing that now, it just seems like it, I don't know, it just, it's like a mental block for me. It's not like I don't like what's happening. It's just a mental block that, like you said, the stories have to make the character better and make him, you said, happier. And, you know, it has to make him better, happier. But I think it has the potential to do that, and I'm enjoying it.
And I don't think it really affects the Golden Age stories that much, does the retcon, because it's sort of they've put Judy in after Jay's series ended, but before Barry took over the Flash.
It's in a the just the kind of right spot to where you know he shouldn't have had stories during that period anyways.
So he's only re they've only really retconned the Silver Age forward.
Except that even the way it's done in story, it still doesn't affect it because in story at the time he didn't remember that because she had been pulled out of time. So it's one of those things that even if you read the stories back then, it still works because you know what I mean? Like he only remembers what happened. Like there'd have to be a separate timeline to show what had happened, you know? Because at the time, does that make sense? I mean, you could go back and say, here's what really happened. But at the same time, you could also say this happened because, you know what I mean? Because like her coming back into the timeline changes the past, but not until she comes back. It's one of those weird time, like something we should think about, like an Legion of Superheroes story. You
Yeah,
can't,
there
you know, one of
was
those kind of.
these. Yeah, I know they did establish that she would visit the past during the Golden Age stories. And I guess with most of those, anyways, we can sort of say, well, maybe they happened between issues that we read or that were published.
I think this idea is that there's a new timeline with her and people remember it, but if you were to read a Golden Age story, it would not change the Golden Age story because at that time that Golden Age story was took place. She had yet to come back into the timeline. You know what I mean? It's kind of a weird muddle. It kind of goes both ways, which is one of the reasons why it works, which to me is just like the retcons they're making to his actual origin in issue number four of the series.
Yeah, it reminded me a fair bit of at the beginning of Rebirth when Wally was brought back from having been removed from time. As basically nobody remembered him until he'd encounter them and touch them or whatever, and then they would remember him.
Yeah. Boy, Wally's had it tough, huh?
Yeah, that was sort of the disappointment with the Rebirth era, because at the very beginning, as Wally comes in as this big symbol of hope, everything's going back to normal, and then everything just goes south from there.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I still struggle with that had to that we had to go through that. And it's just like a, I don't know, I don't understand destroying characters like that. Well, we've got a long one for you. I'm gonna stop the conversation right there, and Derek and I will finish up next episode. Thanks for tuning in, and look forward to talking to you again soon.